It's happy feet.
It's 8:30 New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike offers you four know-it-alls who are willing to answer or try to answer the questions you send us. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more, plus a 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of duplication, Information Please uses the question that was received first, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now, light up a Lucky Strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, spontaneous and completely unrehearsed, Information Please continues on its carefree way. Tonight, we present Franklin P. Adams, light verse writer and conductor of the Conning Tower in the New York Post, John Kieran, amateur naturalist, sports expert, and Shakespearean authority par excellence, our old friend Dean Taylor, composer and music critic, and as our special guest, one of America's favorite stage and screen stars, whose most recent picture, Topper Returns, opens late this month, Mr. Roland Young. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Suppose we start this evening with a question coming to us from David Carton of Brooklyn, New York. This is a three-part question. Get two out of three if you can. It's about nonsense verses. Complete these bits of nonsense verse. I shall read you in each case the first three lines. And as you probably perceive, you have to give me the fourth. Here's the first. Babies haven't any hair. Old men's heads are just as bare. Between the cradle and the grave, how does it end? Mr. Taylor?
Rhyme is something with shave.
Attaboy. That shows a practiced hand at this job, Mr. Adams. All you have to do now is make up a few more
sentences. Never heard of it. Sounds like Hilaire Belloc.
No, it is by Samuel Hoffenstein. And the line is, between the cradle and the grave lies a haircut and a shave. Remember it, Mr. Taylor, now?
I remember it now. I was going to make one up, though.
If you only made that one up, you would have been right instead of wrong. Now I have to get the next two right. Making toast at the fireside, nurse fell in the grate and died. And what makes it 10 times worse? How does that end, General? Mr. Taylor?
Nobody cares to sweep up nurse.
No, you've got it mixed with another one, I think, Mr. Taylor.
By the same author?
Very probably. I don't know who the author was, Mr. Adams, but can you give us the fourth line?
Author was Harry Graham.
I know, but that doesn't rhyme with worse. Making toast at the fireside, nurse fell in the grate and died. And what makes it 10 times worse? All the toast was burned with nurse. Remember it? That gives us two wrong and starts us off beautifully, gentlemen. Now, how about this one? The pig is not a nervous beast. He never worries in the least. He lives his tranquil life unshaken.
Oh, when he dies, brings home the bacon.
Yes, and... very good, Mr. Young. Got a tattoo on it. Who is the author of the...
Hilaire Belloc.
Don't take the credit away from Mr. Roland Young, who wrote the verse. Did you know that, Mr. Adams?
No, I did not.
Very good. Do you remember the title of the book in which the verse appeared?
Not for Children.
Yes, and I always thought that was one of the best titles, if not one of the best books.
Oh, I know one of the best books.
A very good title. That gives us one out of three, sending $25 instead of the Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike, and Mr. Clarkson. And shooting us on to the next question, a four-part question, get three out of four. This comes from Edith Danzig of Los Angeles. If you wanted to obtain the following in their native surroundings, gentlemen, where would you go and what would you have? The first, a chihuahua. If you wanted to obtain whatever that is, Mr. Curran.
Well, you could probably obtain one right in New York if you had a full purse, or at least a reasonable
amount
of money.
In native surroundings.
It's a Mexican hairless dog.
A Mexican hairless
very
dog.
Very small animal.
It's practically a dogless dog, in addition to being hairless.
Yes. Yes. Very unpleasant.
Very repulsive creature. Very repulsive creature. What were you going to say, Mr. Young?
I was going to say that.
That's right. You've got the idea of this show right off the reel. Now, suppose you wanted to obtain a Manx, M-A-N-X. Where would you go? What would it be? Mr. Young.
Isle of Man would be a cat on their tail.
Without any tail at all. It, I have it that has a rudimentary tail. It's only
quite a bit. Well, it's hide. I mean, it's invisible.
Oh, it is not visible?
I don't think so.
I see. And how many vertebrae does the Manx cat have? Oh, you don't have to know, Mr. Young.
The usual number.
No, no. Very good. Only three. Only three. Only three. One for each of its three lives. That's correct. Now, how about a dingo? A dingo. Mr. Young again.
Australian dog, wild dog.
Very good. Yes, dingo, Australian wild dog. And how about a rock hopper? A rock hopper? Oh, Mr. Young again.
Penguin.
A penguin. This burst of raucous laughter is due to the fact that shortly before this program began, we presented Mr. Young with a penguin in an unwild state, however. A wooden penguin. Mr. Young is known as a penguin fancier. Crazy about him, too. Where would you get the rock hopper, Mr. Young?
Down in the Antarctic.
Yeah, any particular place? It's a big ocean.
I know, but I haven't been there. I don't know.
Where do you get your own penguins for choice?
Oh, all over the place.
Just pick them up wherever you
happy.
Well, rock hoppers apparently frequent the Falkland Islands, New Zealand, and the audience cannot see.
On the head.
On the head, yeah.
That's all right. Plumes.
Oh, we got 4 out of 4 on that, gentlemen. How about this one from Norman M. Lobsense of Brooklyn, New York? Get 2 out of 3. This is about cats of fiction, imaginary cats. What cat faked blindness and played a confidence game with a lame fox? What cat faked blindness and played a confidence game with a lame fox? Mr. Adams.
Would that be an Aesop?
No, I'm afraid not. But in a modern Aesop, in a modern Aesop, Mr. Young?
In what, what's his name? Fontaine?
No. Fontaine Fox, do you think?
No, no, I'm not. I'm trying to think of something.
La Fontaine?
Yes, La Fontaine.
La Fontaine is not modern.
No.
I don't think. Would be, what, 17th century, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, it was.
Well, I'm
talking about George Ade's face?
No, I'm talking of Walt Disney. I'm talking of the cat in Pinocchio. Who faked blindness and played a confidence game with a lame fox. Isn't that right, Mr. Taylor? You're an old Disney expert.
Yes, I remember Cleo very well.
Oh, don't, but you don't Cleo, remember the cat. No, Cleo's a gold.
Figaro is the cat.
Figaro is the cat. I think you'll find, if you go to see Pinocchio again, that my answer is correct. How about the second one? What cat cried out and uncovered a gruesome murder? A cat who cried out and uncovered a gruesome murder. A cat of fiction. Mr. Young.
Edgar Allan Poe's, one of the stories of the Letters of Dumas.
No, you got the wrong story. You've got the right man. Name another story. If you get it now, if you get it correct now, I'll count it as right. It wasn't the Murders in the Rue Morgue. Mr. Kieran.
Would that be the tell?
Yes. Mr. Young, the Black Cat. What were you going to say, Mr.
Kieran? I was going to give the wrong answer. So
why didn't you? Mr. Young had it right. It's the Black Cat. A horrible story. What cat became the subject of a symphonic composition? Mr. Adams.
Crazy Cat.
Crazy Cat is right. Who wrote it?
John Alden Carpenter.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Adams. That gives us 2 out of 3. Mr. Taylor had his hand
up. I believe Scarlatti had a cat and wrote a cat fugue.
Did he really?
I'm not positive that it was Scarlatti, come to think of it. But it was a composer.
We're getting vaguer and vaguer as you keep on talking.
No, it was the first kitten on the keys. His cat jumped on the keyboard of the piano, only took down the notes and made a fugue out of it.
Wasn't a symphony, though.
Well, hardly.
No, not even a quarter of a symphony. But that answer would be very good if I hadn't said symphonic composition.
Yes,
if
it would be very entertaining answer.
Right. Here's one from Gerald J. Morrissey of Jackson Heights of this city. Get 3 out of 4. This is a very easy one. I hesitate to propound it so easy. We know the following men most commonly by one name. Nevertheless, each of them had another name, a last name. Give the full name of each one. The first is Dante, the Italian poet Dante. Mr. Kieran.
Alighieri.
Andre Alighieri, very good. Author of?
Inferno.
The Inferno, yes.
And a lot of sonnets.
Yes. Now the next is the painter, Rembrandt. He had a full name, Rembrandt. Mr. Taylor.
Van Rijn. Yes.
Van Rijn.
First name was Jacob.
Was there a name before Rembrandt?
Jacob Rembrandt Van Rijn.
No wonder he just called himself Rembrandt. How do you spell the Van Rijn, Mr. Taylor?
Well, I wouldn't care to, but if I were forced, I'd make it R-U-Y-N.
I think it, Mr. Young?
R-H-Y-N.
I think R-I-J-N, as Mr. Young says, would be the correct spelling.
Mine's pretty.
How about Michelangelo? Had a full name, Michelangelo? Mr. Kieran.
Michelangelo Buonarroti.
Yes, Michelangelo Buonarroti. Mr. Young and Mr. Taylor had their hands up, too. Galileo. Galileo had a last name. How they ever found these people in the phone book, I don't know. Mr. Kieran.
Well, nobody else wants it. It's almost a duplicate of Galileo.
Practically.
So that I really can't...
all you have to do is stutter it, practically.
Well, it's Galileo or something.
Galileo. Yes, Galileo of the Galileo family. Wouldn't that be it, Mr. Taylor?
Yes, you'll keep busy for the evening on
that. I told you that was an easy question. How about this one, gentlemen, from Mrs. Donald P. Wright of Cuscob, Connecticut. Name four book or play titles in which parts of a ship or shipping terms are mentioned. Any part of a ship or any shipping term. Mr. Kieran, start.
Hit the deck.
A musical comedy of some years ago. That'd be a very good one. Well, now you know what the parts of a ship are, gentlemen. Mr. Taylor?
Well, A Sentimental Journey by Lawrence Stern.
Oh, isn't that nice? it's not the title of the book, but it'll do.
No.
It'll do.
Well, I'll think up a better one.
Let's see. Let me see if I can help you a bit. How about Rudder Grange by Frank P. Stockton? A very funny
book. R. Stockton.
Frank R. I beg your pardon. You're helpful. Mr. Kip.
Why doesn't Frank Adams say Ruddy Gord?
Well, why don't you, Mr. Adams?
Because I don't think it'll be cute.
there was a pretty well-known American novel written some years ago called Uncle Tom's Cabin. That would be a shipping term, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Wouldn't 3 years before the mast.
Before the mast.
Yes, that would be very good, except I think it's two. Always exaggerating, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, the Master of Ballantrae.
The Master of Ballantrae. That's very good, yes. Very good.
Cabin in the Sky.
Cabin in the Sky. Very good one. White Cargo. Sailor Beware. Oh, one could go on forever if one had a card in front of one the way I have. We have at least four. How about this from Mabel R. Hankett of Springfield, Massachusetts? This is a musical question, gentlemen. Four parts. Get three out of four. Identify the literary or operatic dream suggested by each of the selections that are now going to be played. Let's have the first. Each of you suggests a dream to you. Mr. Taylor had his hand up once.
The dream of Hansel, the angels taking care of Hansel and Gretel as they fall asleep.
Yes, in Humperdinck's famous opera. That's quite right. Now the second. Whether you call that a dream or not. Mr.
The overture to A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Midsummer Night's Dream. Yes, yes. Occasionally a nightmare. And
the
third?
Yes, it's the wedding march. Not
the wedding march. Right. Right. And the third? I think this is the hardest one. Mr. Taylor had his hand up almost at once.
King Dodon in The Cock Door by Rimsky-Korsakov falls asleep and sees the princess of Shimanaka or something in his dream.
Yeah, fair. Very nice company, too.
Oh,
there. And now the fourth and last. Mr. Taylor, again.
Well, that is about you might call it an ultra-modern version of the Wedding March from Lohengrin.
Who dreams to it?
Nobody dreams to it.
Don't be categorical,
I should say.
No. The only one that I should have expected to know this one, by the way, is yourself, Mr. Young. Do those dulcet strains recall nothing to you?
Would you mind playing them again?
Not at all. Not at all. See if you can wake up, Mr. Young. Yes, Beggar on Horseback, in which I think you played a prominent role, didn't you?
Yes.
Well, I ought to know. I wrote the music. Yeah.
Well, why didn't you say so?
You and who else?
Parker?
You have wonderful memories, both of you. Well, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now we come upon Mr. Cross in an alphabetical mood.
I have here a list in alphabetical order of 119 tobacco markets that handle 96% of all the cigarette tobacco sold at auction in this country. Now, at every one of these markets last season, the American Tobacco Company paid higher prices to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. Let's start right at the beginning of the list with the A's. First is Aberdeen, North Carolina. American paid 10% more than the market average. Next, Abingdon, Virginia. 36% more. Adel, Georgia, 37% more. Ahoskie, North Carolina. Well, at Ahoskie, American paid 67% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 67% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. No wonder with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Have you tried a Lucky lately?
Mr. Cross, you gave us the ABCs of smoking in just 58 seconds. And now we'll go on with a question from George Brager of this city. What are the following pairs of characters, they're all from novels or plays, have in common? What do they have in common? The first pair is Ophelia and Mariamne. Ophelia and Mariamne. Ophelia, of course, we all know. Mariamne, does none of you gentlemen remember? No ideas at all. I have never seen four blanker looks.
Oh, well, they were not quite sane.
No, I think Ophelia, it was not quite sane. That's true enough. But Mariamne, who is the heroine in Maxwell Anderson's Winter Set, was like Ophelia in the sense that both were desperately in love with a man whose one desire is to avenge his father's death. Remember? And they both died because of it. Don't remember Winter Set?
No.
All right, then they just don't remember it, Mr. Adams. No harm in that. That gives us one wrong. And what do the following two characters have in common? Edmond Dantès and Jean Valjean. Miss Kieran.
They both escaped from prison became very famous thereafter.
Quite right. That's quite right. And can you identify the two characters for us, Mr. Kieran?
The Count of Monte Cristo is one, and the other was the hero of Les Miserables.
Yes, that's right. Now, how about Mr. Brink, B-R-I-N-K, and Count Sergei? Mr. Taylor.
Well, Mr. Brink was Death, wasn't he, in On Borrowed Time?
That's quite right.
Well, then Count Sergei was probably Death, too.
That's right.
In Death Takes a Holiday.
That's right. Death Takes a Holiday.
Well, that's right.
That's very good, Mr. Taylor. Very good. Now, that gives us 2 out of 3. Not an easy question, I think. Here's one from Kenji Takeuchi of Norristown, Pennsylvania. Get 2 out of 3. With what hobby or occupations do you associate each group of clues that I'm going to give you? Here's the first set. Floater, sinker, and fly. That would indicate what hobby or occupation to you. Mr. Young.
Sinker is fishing.
They're all the same. Three of them. Fishing?
Fishing.
That's what I would have said if I weren't informed by my car that is not the correct answer.
Hmm. What is the other?
Floater, sinker, and fly. What were you going to say, Mr. Kieran?
Well, I'd say baseball.
That's right. That would be right. What's a floater, Mr. Kieran?
A floater is a half-speed ball in which it doesn't rotate on its own axis very rapidly.
Sinker. In short, it floats.
Yeah.
Sounds as if it were like Japan.
Sinker is a ball that dips as it comes up to the bat. And a fly, of course, is a long hit to the outfield, caught before it hits the ground. Or
yes.
Should be caught.
Now, how about Mr. Young's answer, Mr. Kieran? Would you
I think
that?
It should be accepted as correct. It certainly would be three good terms in fishing.
Yes, I should think so, too. Mr. Young, do you mind if I accept your answer as correct?
Oh, I like it.
Oh. Here's another set of terms, all connected with one hobby or occupation. Traveler, apron, tormentor, and baby. Traveler, apron, tormentor, and baby. Any ideas, gentlemen? We have several hands. Mr. Young.
The theater.
The theater. What are these things? What's a traveler in the theater?
I'm not at all sure what a traveler is. I know what a tormentor and a baby are.
What is a tormentor and what is a baby?
Tormentor is a thing at the side, okay.
Yes.
And a baby is a lamp.
Yes, it's a spot.
Yeah.
A baby spot.
A traveler is a pair of tableau curtains that slide on a track.
Yes, and you can make people fly across the stage with them, can't you?
If you like.
If you've got a Christmas pantomime. Yeah. And what's the apron?
Kind of show.
Apron is the front of the stage.
That sticks beyond the...
Yes, that was a very nice gesture that you gave us, Mr. Young. It's hard to remember, of course, at radio.
The front of the stage where the footlights are.
That's right, yes. How about this set of clues? Stress, podium, capital, dorma. Stress, podium, capital, dorma. All connected with what occupation? Mr. Kieran.
Well, it might be architecture.
It is. Mr. Adams, what were you going to say?
It is architecture.
Right. All those terms are connected with architecture. Yeah, here's one from Mrs. E. H. Sutton of Montclair, New Jersey. Get 2 out of 3. Well, can you give me a line of poetry about the following parts of the anatomy. First, a moving finger. A moving finger. Mr. Young.
Moving finger writes and having writ moves on.
Yes, it sounds like you played the principal part in the Rubaiyat. That's quite right. Yeah, from Omakai and Rubaiyat. Now, here's another. Reluctant feet. The line, Mr. Adams.
Where the brook and river meet.
Yes, can you give us the line involving the feet?
Standing with reluctant feet, where the brook and river meet. Maidenhood by H.W. Longfellow.
Very, very good. Thank you, Mr. Adams.
Isn't there a schoolboy in the Seven Ages of Man who has something the matter with his feet?
How should I know? I think I'm an orthopedist.
No, next
you're not
school,
reluctant.
Aren't they reluctant?
No, they creep unwillingly to school.
Well, that's very near it, Mr. Adams. Unwilling and reluctant are very near it.
Well, at least his feet aren't.
I sort of like that answer, Mr. Adams.
I like it.
What's
the
good for?
Charm, I think.
Well, we've had finger, feet, and how about toe? A fantastic toe. A line with fantastic toe. And Mr. Adams.
Come and trip it as you go on the light fantastic toe, Milton.
Very good. Very good, Mr. Adams. Thank you. That's fine. That gives us 3 out of 3. How about this one? From Violet Plain, Buffalo, New York. What part of the army are the following men in if the insignia on their collar is the following? Now, in the first case, we have crossed pistols. What part of the army? Mr. Adams.
Artillery.
Think not.
Oh, pistols.
Pistols. Did you hear me say something else? Cross pistols.
Oh, cross cannons.
Pistols and cannons, yes, they do sound alike. cross pistols, gentlemen, would indicate that the soldier would belong to the military police. Mr. Kiram is an old soldier, I should think you might have known.
Oh, military police I ever saw had brass swords to indicate their vulgarity.
No, apparently military police have crossed pistols as their signs. Now, how about crossed flags with a torch in the center? Crossed flags, Mr. Young.
Signal Corps?
Signal Corps is right. Thank you. What were we going to say, Mr. Adams?
Signal Corps.
Doing very well, Steve.
I was going to say Signal Corps.
Mr. Taylor, how original you are. And crossed rifles, gentlemen. Crossed rifles. We have Mr. Kieran.
Well, Mr. Young said it.
Mr. Right. Young, Mr. Kieran both said infantry. That's quite right. And how about three castle turrets? Three castle turrets. Mr. Kieran.
That is the engineers.
That is the engineer corps. That's quite right. That gives us 4 out of 4. Here's one from Mrs. Alex C. Hood of Las Cruces, New Mexico. I hope I'm pronouncing the name of that town correctly. Can you give me 3 incidents in literature or the drama? We call it the drama, Mr. Young, on this program.
Yes.
In which the arrival of unexpected or unwelcome guests is important to the plot. Is that question clear?
Say it over again, please.
All right. Give me 3 incidents in literature or the drama where unexpected or unwelcome guests arrive and make a difference to the plot. Mr. Adams, start us off.
I think there was a play called The Man from Mars and another one called The Man from Blankley's, wasn't there?
Yes. That gives us 2 men. But were they both unexpected and unwelcome?
I think they were.
If you're asking me, I wouldn't know. It's quite possible that your answer is correct. Mr. Kirk.
Did you say this had to be a play?
No.
Enoch Arden.
Enoch Arden.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right. Tennyson's Enoch Arden would be a very good one. I remember that one myself. Mr. Kieran, another one.
Count of Monte Cristo.
Who enters unexpectedly there?
The Count of Monte Cristo comes back from the grave.
Kieran Carlin. Mr. Taylor.
What's his name? Young Lochinvar.
Young Lochinvar is a very good one.
Yes.
Certainly an unexpected but not unwelcome guest to the young
lady.
No, he
did, but her father didn't care
Rip
for
Van Winkle.
Rip Van Winkle is an unexpected guest. That's a very good one, Mr. Young. How about Romeo, who comes in very unexpectedly at the Capulet's party?
Oh, he was welcome.
No, he crashed
the
gate.
I know he was made welcome by her father.
But he wasn't generally welcome, was he, would you say? Except to Juliet.
Well,
Adams?
I won't question.
I'll tell you, public unexpected boy number one, or unwanted boy number one, the man who came to dinner.
The man who came for dinner, yes. There's an unexpected guest who, not an unexpected guest, but an expected one who became very unwelcome.
Wore out same.
The ghost of Banquo would be a sort of unexpected guest, too, I should think. Well, that gives us 4 or 5. How about this? From Matty Gordon of Brooklyn, get 2 out of 3. In what play or movie, gentlemen, is a house wrecked?
Oh.
Mr. Young.
George Washington slept here?
I haven't seen it and don't know. Is a house wrecked, Mr.
Yeah,
Taylor?
It
is? All right. How about the house in Rebecca? Isn't that destroyed by fire at the end of the...
You'd hardly call that wreckage, would you?
Well, I think fireage and wreckage will do.
Pillage.
Don't split your insurance, Mr. Taylor. Mr. Kieran?
The Three Little Pigs, I believe 2 of the houses are blown down.
That's a very, very good one. I hadn't thought of it. And what play or movie is a whole city wrecked?
a city wrecked. Mr. Curran.
Fall of Pompeii. Last Days of Pompeii.
Last Days of Pompeii. Is it a movie?
It's a
book.
Well,
if it isn't, they've missed something.
Oh, I hope Mr. Goldwyn is listening. Mr. Taylor.
What's the matter with Gone with the Wind?
Not a thing. Is a city wrecked and gone with the wind?
Well, it's buried.
Yeah. Atlanta.
Atlanta, yes. Yeah. Or perhaps just part of it.
Well,
I think there was a movie called San Francisco, which was wrecked as a result of either an earthquake or a fire.
Fire, they say.
Oh, I know. And how about in Old Chicago?
Oh, yes.
That was wrecked as a result of a fire. In what play or movie is a whole world wrecked? A world wrecked. Mr. Young.
The Shape of Things to Come?
The Shape of Things to Come by H.G. Wells.
Mm.
I think that's right. And there was another movie in which I think you yourself played a part.
The Man Who Could Work Miracles.
Yes, The Man Who Could Work Miracles. There a whole world was wrecked. Hollywood seems to be able to wreck cities, houses, worlds,
parts, made in London.
Practically anything. Well, I think that's all we'll have time for tonight. Now, Mr. Cross wishes me to headline what he has to say now with this. The experts know.
Yes, Mr. Fadiman, the tobacco experts, the buyers, auctioneers, and warehousemen know. They know that Lucky Strike pays higher prices and gets the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. Such reports as I read you a few minutes ago, that American paid 10% more than the market average at Aberdeen, North Carolina, 36% more at Abingdon, Virginia, 37% more at Adel, Georgia, 67% more at Ahoskie, North Carolina. Those reports are no surprise to the tobacco experts, for at auction after auction, they see who buys what leaf and the prices paid. So it means a lot that the tobacco experts, who can truly be called independent, the ones not connected with any cigarette company, choose Lucky's for their own cigarette by an overwhelming majority. In fact, with these independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1. So profit by their experience in selecting your cigarette. Make sure you enjoy finer, lighter, milder tobaccos by asking for Lucky Strike.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Now, this evening, Lucky Strike has paid out only $25 and only one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, which is very creditable going, gentlemen. Thank you, Mr. Taylor, and thank you, Mr. Young, for helping out so nobly this evening. And next week, Mr. Oscar Levant, Mr. John Kieran, and Mr. Franklin P. Adams will be aided and abetted by Elsa Lanchester, who has appeared in many motion pictures with her husband, Charles Lawton, and is at present starring on Broadway in a play called They Walk Alone. Remember, listeners, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. And if the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, we'll have a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer of Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Luckies pay higher prices for the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehousemen, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.